the Senate Committee on Judiciary. We are meeting on April 9th, 1987 at 3 p.m. in hearing room 343. We have a public hearing and possible work session on the following bills. Senate bills 356, 358, 441, 471, 472, 482, 501, House bills 2086 and 2158.
Senate Committee on Judiciary will come to order. Subcommittee of Senators Brenham and Fry will hear public testimony beginning with Senate Bill 472. Ira Zaroff.
My name is Ira Zaroff. I'm an attorney for Oregon Legal Services and represent the Oregon Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence, testifying in support of this bill. The bill does three things. It basically allows district attorneys to obtain fees when they enforce abuse prevention orders, when the order is obtained pursuant to an ex parte order. At the current time, they can only obtain those fees when the order they're enforcing is obtained pursuant to an order in which there was a hearing. And that difference is a result of an oversight last session. There is no reasonable basis for that that I certainly am aware of. The second thing the bill does is it changes the venue of the act. It makes venue the same as in domestic relations suits. That allows the suit to be filed in the place where either the respondent or petitioner resides. The way the bill, way it is currently, the venue statutes in 14.080 apply, which state that the venue is only in the county where the abuse occurred or where the respondent lives. Ms. Helmley will have some stories about that and why that isn't an efficient way to have the bill work and why that does not work. The third thing the bill does is expand the coverage of the Abuse Prevention Act by including individuals who have a child together but may not have lived together. These people had continual contacts with one another. There's an opportunity for abuse in that kind of setting because of the nature of the relationship, and we feel that those people should be covered. And Ms. Helmley will also testify some about those problems. Thank you.
All right. Go ahead, please.
My name is Vieta Helmley, and I represent the Oregon Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence, and I'm the director of the Mid-Valley Women's Crisis Service here in Salem. And what I'd like to do is talk about the venue issues and about the couple who is not married but has a child in common. The easiest way to talk about the venue issue is to talk about some problems that have occurred in Marion County. Lots of folks who live in Polk County use the crisis service, which is actually in Marion County here in Salem. If they have to return to Polk County to get the restraining order where the abuse occurred, often enough the abuser will be lurking around the courthouse and attack them. We have had at least two instances where the abuser was literally hanging around outside of the courthouse in Dallas waiting for the victim and, say, our volunteer or staff person from the agency to go over to the courthouse, and then it attacked her right there in the parking lot of the courthouse. When a woman has to flee to another county or to another city in order to be safe, we think that she should be able to apply for a restraining order in the county that she then resides in rather than having to go back to her county of origin. On the second part of the bill, we would like to see protection offered to women who were not married to the abuser but with whom they have a child in common. I can give you a good example of that one, and I'll call them Barbara and Jerry. Barbara and Jerry lived together in 1984 and had a baby together. He had abused her several times. She left and went to a shelter. She obtained a restraining order and temporary child custody in 1986. A year later, she thought she was safe when the restraining order ran out. By that time, she had been out of the relationship for more than 2 years. They had not lived together in the last 2 years. On the last day of the restraining order, literally, her ex-partner attacked her and battered her very seriously. The next day he went to court and lied to the judge. Since it was an ex-parte hearing, the judge had nothing else to base his decision on, so of course gave the abuser the restraining order, even though the abuser had lied about the assault, lied about the fact about whether or not the children had lived with him. The children had not lived with him, and he lied about the fact that they had not The fact was they had not lived together in the last 2 years, but he indicated to the judge that they had. So the judge acted quite properly and gave the restraining order. Barbara immediately went and filed for a show cause hearing, and the show cause hearing took place. The judge vacated the order for temporary child custody, but did not get rid of the temporary restraining order. Ultimately, since there was no custody determination or there was no custody decision involved in the process, Barbara was able to get her child back. And at this point, we are waiting to see what will eventually happen. We do know that the abuser went back to the courthouse and tried another judge, but was turned down.
Any questions by the committee? Mr. Zeroff, on the part here about the changing the ability to get a reasonable attorney fee on behalf of the county by the district attorney.
Correct.
And extending that now to ex parte orders. You know, that the order which would allow attorney fees becomes a judgment, as I read the present law.
Yes.
And I'm a little bit bothered by a system that would allow a judgment to be entered without an ex parte hearing. Basically.
Well, the hearing is ex parte. It is then served on the respondent who has knowledge of it. And before this provision would come into effect, he'd actually violate the order that had been served upon him. So there would be certainly due process in that instance.
So there's no question about knowledge of the
order. No question at all.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
And I believe that we don't have any other witnesses signed up on Senate Bill 472. So I'll close the public hearing on that bill, and we'll go to a public hearing on House Bill 2158, Senator Yee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm here to, for the record, I'm State Senator May Yee from District 19. I come here before you today to propose two very simple amendments to House Bill 2158. I have recently discussed this bill with the director of the Linn County Department of Health Services, who suggested these changes. In his judgment as a psychiatric social worker, Mr. Dallin has argued convincingly to me that allowing only qualified psychiatrists to perform the examinations will make implementation of the statute very difficult. In rural areas, psychiatrists are not always available. This requirement will also unnecessarily increase the cost of these examinations. Therefore, I'm proposing that the bill be amended to have the court allow any other qualified professional non-medical examiner to do the necessary examinations. This provision would amend House Bill 2158 so that it would more closely parallel the civil commitment statutes relating to persons alleged to be mentally ill, ORS 426110. In these court hearings, the examination to determine mental illness is usually performed by a physician and a non-medical examiner. A non-medical examiner is a mental health professional who has been certified by the state mental health division specifically for this. In order to receive certification as a non-medical examiner from the state mental health division, a mental health professional typically has graduate level training in a mental health field, has received specialized training sponsored by the state mental health division, and has a minimum number of years' experience working professionally with mentally ill persons. The use of non-medical examiners in civil commitment hearings has been so well received that House Bill 2324, filed at the request of Joint Interim Judiciary Committee for Task Force on Civil Commitment of Mentally Ill Persons, eliminates the requirement that one of the two court-appointed examiners be a licensed physician. Instead, House Bill 2324, if passed, would allow a single non-medical examiner to advise the court. House Bill 2158 would be improved by moving in the same direction. Finally, I concur with Lynn County's health director on the second point, that something should be done to combine the authority to spend tax-generated funds with a responsibility to manage these expenditures carefully. I'm referring to lines 13 to 14, which require the county to bear all costs of the examination. Perhaps the court, meaning the state, should be responsible for payment, since the court has the discretion to order the examination and to determine who is qualified to perform it. Therefore, I suggest deleting county on line 13 and inserting court. I would encourage you to consider these very thoughtful amendments, which I mentioned were suggested by the director of the Lynn County Health Department, who has a master's degree in psychiatric social work and certainly speak from the accumulation of his experience in community mental health. And I'm sorry that Mr. Dallin cannot be here to testify himself. He cannot take time away from his work. And I'm sorry I can't discuss this in more detail, but I would like you to consider these amendments.
All right. Senator, thank you for being here. Any questions on the committee members?
Well, comment, but maybe the witness would like to respond to it. It sounds like this is a budget-driven amendment primarily. Being a trained social worker myself, I just would question whether, in general, I would want to live in a community where people who were there was a concern on the part of the court that somebody was dangerous person due to a mental problem, that I don't think I'd, in most cases, want a social worker to be doing the examination and making the recommendation to the court as compared to a psychiatrist. It'd be cheaper to have a psychiatrist, but I think that might be one place where I wouldn't want to save money, Senator. If they ended up recommending that somebody wasn't dangerous when they were, because a psychiatric social worker can't administer, typically they're not trained in administering tests like the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory, which is a test that's through many years of use is considered to be highly reliable to tell whether somebody is, in lay terms, crazy or not, paranoid, thinks that people are out to get them. Social worker can't administer a test like that. So if you've got somebody the court thinks might be dangerous because of they're crazy, and you have somebody that's not a doctor, psychologists can administer those tests, but social workers can't. And I have to say that until I hear more than I've heard so far, this sounds like a budget-driven concern idea, way to save money for the county. Break it right down to one syllable words, and I'm concerned about that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wyers, this is a recommendation from the Joint Interim Judiciary Committee for Task Force on Civil Commitment of Mentally Ill Persons.
Your amendment?
And they recommend...
Your amendment to say it doesn't have to be a psychiatrist? I mean,
This amendment is a recommendation from this task force on civil commitment of mentally ill persons to eliminate the requirement that one of the two court-appointed examiners be a licensed physician. They are recommended that one of them can be a non-medical social examiner who has had the special training and special educational training also. So this is one of the options that can be offered to the court to decide. If the court feels that this person is not that extremely sexually offender or dangerous, he can have the option of appointing someone such as a non-medical social examiner who is certificated by the Mental Health Division, who believes that he's had that training and the expertise to do it. So this is an alternative. It doesn't eliminate completely the requirement of a psychiatrist, but offer a physician and a licensed examiner as an alternative. It also has the benefit of being cost-effective.
Okay. Thanks, Senator, for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Let's see. We have Dr. Mazur-Hart. I hope I was close in that pronunciation.
Right on the money, in fact.
Okay. Right, we have those. Thank you, Senator. Go ahead, sir.
My name is Stan Mazur-Hart. I'm the chief psychologist at the Oregon State Hospital and presenting testimony today on behalf of Joseph Murray, the administrator of the State Mental Health Division. ORS 161735 currently permits the court to either appoint one or more psychiatrists to examine an allegedly dangerous offender or to order the defendant to be taken to a state hospital designated by the Mental Health Division. The Mental Health Division introduced the proposed revisions to ORS 161735 for the following reasons. It is not necessary for these examinations to be performed at a state hospital. The determination of dangerousness relies heavily on the individual's history of dangerous and reckless behavior rather than inpatient clinical observation and assessment. None of the 64 defendants admitted to the Oregon State Hospital for dangerous offender evaluation since 1984 has had a major mental illness. The efficiency of the examinations would be increased substantially if performed at the local correctional facility. Criminal histories are readily available at local correctional agencies and frequently not available to state hospital staff at the time of the examination. This statutory change would alleviate in a small way the chronic overcrowding of the forensic psychiatric program at Oregon State Hospital. The potential risk of escape during transportation to and from the hospital and while at the hospital would be reduced. The overall cost to the counties would be reduced by eliminating transportation and related security costs incurred by the Sheriff's Department and by eliminating the daily costs associated with inpatient hospitalizations. The State Mental Health Division would support amending the bill to permit other qualified mental health professionals to perform these evaluations. In line 7, that would delete psychiatrists and insert mental health professionals licensed or registered to practice in the state of Oregon or employed by a community mental health program approved by the Mental Health Division. This Mental Health Division recommends passage of House Bill 2158.
All right. Any questions? Senator Wires.
I see here in 161735, it says the court shall order a pre-sentence investigation and a psychiatric examination. The court may appoint one or more qualified psychiatrists to examine the defendant. Now, am I missing something, or does that allow them to just use one psychiatrist if they want to?
That is my understanding.
Okay. Well, the previous witness said something about that there were two people examining, and if it was her position that one of them should be able to not be a psychiatrist. So you're saying change the law the way it came over from the House. It says don't give the counties the option of sending the mental hospital anymore. That's what you're mainly here to support, right?
That's what the bill, correct. That is what the bill is aimed at.
All right.
Primarily.
All right. But you're also saying that if somebody wants, you would favor an amendment that would say that instead of using a psychiatrist, it could say qualified mental health professional.
Correct.
Okay. Now, who does that include besides psychiatrists and psychologists that are licensed psychologists?
Registered clinical social workers. It would include by this language.
Now, you're a psychologist?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, unless I've missed something, a registered clinical social worker typically is not trained in administering psychological examinations like psychologists, like the MMPI. Isn't that right?
That's generally correct, yes.
So you would be comfortable having this person stay in the local community and having somebody who's very good at doing social social psychological type interviews where they know how to ask people about their family background, their childhood, and all that. You'd be satisfied with that? Is that what you're saying?
I think the division position is that as long as the individual is trained and qualified and licensed by the state to practice, that those individuals could in fact do the evaluations. As a matter of fact, the majority of these evaluations don't involve psychological testing, though perhaps they should, and that's because the majority of defendants who present or are presented to us for a dangerous offender evaluation choose not to communicate with us and choose not to submit to interview or to complete any psychological test data, generally on the advice of their counsel. And so the determination is made on the basis of the record rather than on firsthand collected data. That is how the system and that process has evolved.
But as a professional, regardless of the position of your department, doesn't it make you a little uncomfortable, the idea of not having them sent to the hospital, having kept out in the local community, and having anybody who's got a license be able to be considered adequate to, well, anyway.
I would agree with you. I think that within the professional ranks, only those individuals qualified to do it should be able to, and membership in the class doesn't necessarily qualify you. It may not as a psychologist either, but I would agree with that, yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? All right, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
That will conclude the public hearing on House Bill 2158, and I'll pause at this time to let the audience know the order of bills that I'm going to be hearing. The next one I'm going to hear is Senate Bill 482, and Mr. Hockman can come on up here while I'm finishing the rest of my statement here. We're going to have to get Eric in here on this one. And then the next will be Senate Bill 356, and then House Bill 2086, Senate Bill 471, Senate Bill 441, and the last one is Senate Bill 358. If there's anybody here on Senate Bill 501, you can leave. We're not going to get to it. Senate Bill 482. Identify yourself, sir, and go ahead.
Yes. Senator Fry and Senators, I'm Lee Hockman. I represent the Community Mental Health Program Directors, and I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 482, which is a provision to delete the sunset provision on a bill that was passed in the last legislative session. I have submitted testimony to legal counsel, Mr. Kramer. This provision allows the community mental health program directors to authorize the peace officer to take a mental health hold on a client if it is deemed in the director's concern that that client is in danger to themselves or others under the current provisions of law. That bill has been in process, or that provision has been in process for the last year, approximately about 12 to 14 months in some counties. We have now 9 counties who are using that provision of law. We estimate that there's probably about 30 individuals who have been taken under that provision of law to be held in a local psychiatric unit to be reviewed and then to determine if commitment is appropriate. We have not heard of any serious problems as originally brought up in the initial bill in last legislative session. But we are aware of the benefits that this bill has given to the local community mental health programs. Some of the comments made by the mental health programs and directors clearly show that this bill has been a positive factor in dealing with clients who are in danger to themselves or to others. I won't go into the details of some of the comments, but I have provided those in the written statements. The community mental health program directors have voiced positive support for this provision when we're finding that it has been very effective in assuring that certain clients receive the necessary emergency mental health care in the communities, which is safe for the communities and for the clients. So we respectfully request that you approve this legislation or pass it on and delete the sunset provision.
All right. Questions, Mr. Hoffman? All right. Thank you for being here from Roseburg.
Thank you.
Any other witnesses that didn't get the chance to sign up on Senate Bill 482? We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 482 and go to... All right. Well, I'm going to skip over 356 for a moment. Let's go to House Bill 2086. Okay, sir, go ahead.
My name is Larry Hodgen. I am a member of the Board of Directors for Correction Industries. And I'm here to request the senators on Senate Bill 2 or House Bill 2086 for an amendment to the bill. And the amendment would give the Board of Directors the authority, the appointing authority over the industry's manager. The reason we're requesting this, we felt we had this authority until a recent Attorney General's decision, which said we did not. I go back to the days of the Senate or the Advisory Committee for Correction Industries. There we were a rubber stamp committee, which we would give recommendations. If the Corrections Department wanted to go along with it, they would. If not, they wouldn't. In the wisdom of the legislature, they decided to establish this board of directors and dropped a can of worms in our pockets. So once we got established, the administrator of the correction divisions at that time more or less gave us lip service. We had an industries manager in there that didn't give us the total picture of what was going on. Eventually he was fired by the administrator. A temporary one was appointed. Finally, the board took control and established the procedures under which the manager was going to be hired. We interviewed and did make the selection. The present administrator, Tom Toombs, feels that the board of directors should have direct control over the industry's managers. We are responsible to the governor, to the legislature, and to the taxpayers of the state of Oregon to turn the industry program around into a profit-making program. With the current with the current industries manager, we've done an excellent job and turned that program around where it's on a positive cash flow basis. The legislature has approved money for a laundry and a few other things, and it's been because of the industry's manager. Our concern is that if Mr. Toombs leaves as the administrator for corrections division, we could end up with somebody in there that may not get along with the person that we want as industry's manager, fire him, and we could end up with loss of the program. And I don't feel that if we're given the responsibility by the people of this state and the legislature and the governor, that we should not have control over who we feel should manage the industry's program. Thank you.
All right, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I'm John Glasscock, Vice Chairman of the Corrections Industries Board of Directors, and I appear here in support of House Bill 2086. As I think we all know, that's primarily a housekeeping bill to stagger the terms of the board of directors. At the present time, technically, all the nine board of directors' terms expired in January at the same moment. So we feel that that's necessary in order to maintain continuity of our working with industries.
Where is Dahlia Way?
That's up on the hill, West Salem.
West Salem.
Yes.
Is it Salem or West Salem?
West Salem, sir.
Okay. I kind of like to know that because we've got your street name, but I don't know what city you're from.
Salem. I'm
West
sorry.
Salem. All right. Any questions, Senator Wires? Do you have any questions?
Well, are you, is Beth Glasscock related to you?
Pardon?
Beth Glasscock related to you?
Yes. She's my daughter.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cohen.
Are you, I assume that you are also requesting the amendments that were, or supportive of the requested amendment to this bill, which is not in the bill right now, I think, right?
Yes, that's correct. I think I can speak for the board in saying that this has the board's support. Upon receipt of the Attorney General's opinion, which basically said that the board of directors had responsibility for programs, but not for people, I think the entire board felt that we had a problem with our position in managing the operation. We did not see how we could manage programs without managing people.
Other questions? All right.
No, Mr. Chairman, I just need to find out. No. We haven't heard. Is there anyone else signed up?
Nope. No one else?